My name is Toby, and we're going to take this time to read from the Bible, and maybe you've heard of that term, preaching. I'm going to be preaching and proclaiming what the Bible says, and we've been in the Gospel of Mark, which is one of the earliest records of Jesus' life, and we've been in it for some time. We're in chapter 10, near the end of chapter 10, if you have a Bible, and you're going to be firing that up. One of the things that that I miss most or a lot about traveling. I don't get to travel a lot anymore. At one point, we lived overseas, and one of the things people ask me, like, you know, what's different about where you live? And immediately, I would always think of the road. And I don't know if you've been outside of North America, maybe South America or Asia or Africa. There are cities and places where the road is a wild, wild place. Like here, it's two lanes and there is someone beside you, and the light, you know, people generally go along where the light goes, right? There are other places where there's not just you, it's like 15 other motorcycles and bicycles. We lived in East Africa. There were cattle and sheep. The chicken literally crosses the road, okay, in some of these places. I don't know, has anybody had that shock before where you land somewhere, you're like, oh my goodness, what is happening? Like, whether it's like you drive on the same side or not, I don't know. Like, it doesn't matter. You're like, I have no idea. I have no idea what's happening right now. We started watching Amazing Race, you know, in the last few years, and I noticed, like, in Canada, they can drive. When they're somewhere else, they're like, you don't get to drive. You just find a taxi, okay? You just figure it out. Because it's so, so different. The interesting thing is, you know, if you took a snapshot of that road at night, you know, maybe it would look actually pretty normal. But you get there during the day and it'd be completely different. And here's the thing: we are in this part of the Gospel of Mark in these few chapters where Mark has been made very, very clear that we are on a road trip with Jesus. Over and over again, he uses the word road or way or journey, and that's the same Greek word underneath. It's hodos. He keeps on saying they were on their way. They were on a journey. And during this time, Jesus is gathering his disciples. He's saying, guys, we're on the way. We're on the road to Jerusalem. And it's not what you think it is. It is completely different. It's as different as your Sunday suburban drive home as it is to a Monday morning commute in Mumbai or Mexico City or Manila. It's completely different. You have no idea what's hitting you. You have no idea. And this term road or way or path is, I was beginning to look at it and study. It's actually a massive, heavyweight image word picture all throughout the Bible. And so we're going to do a little heavy lifting. I know we're not warmed up. We're going to do a little heavy lifting and just do a little journey through the Bible because it's so, so important. And I think I've a few headings. The first one is, it's the way to judgment and salvation. There's a Hebrew word in the Old Testament that is translated way or path. And then the verb is actually, you know, to walk and to tread. And right through the scriptures, there's over 800 references. I'm not going to read 800 references. There's over 800 references to this word. And it talks about the way of judgment and salvation. Right at the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 3, right? Adam and Eve, they disobey God. They rebel against God. As they are kicked out of the Garden of Eden, it says the way back was blocked. It was a sense that this path back to Eden was closed off. And then as the people of Israel, you know, they were enslaved in Egypt, as they journeyed out, what happened? They were on the way through the wilderness, and it talks about that. And then as they enter the promised land, I think we have Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26 on the next slide. Or not. Okay, that's okay. They're before the promised land. And God says, there's two ways to go. There's two roads to walk. You can either obey me and obey my commandments, or you can walk a completely other way. It's the way of judgment. It's the way of salvation. It's the way to life. over 100 times in the Psalms and the Proverbs. These are wisdom, literature, and poetry. It lays out it's this path that we walk to life. Psalm chapter 1, the beginning of this big prayer book, right in the middle of the Bible, this big prayer book, it talks about, it's this meditation on walking in God's ways or walking in the world's ways. It's one way or the other. And then Psalm 119, verse 1, it says right there, "Blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord." And if you might know Psalm, this 119th Psalm is like a bajillion verses long. But it's all about walking in God's way, in God's truth. It is certainly the way to redemption. As the prophets and as Israel, they disobeyed God. As they walked away from what God told them to do, these nations came, they judged them. And they were longing for redemption. They were longing for a Savior, and this became pictured in also a way, and it talks about God coming back, and we read it in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 3. All the Gospels talk about this. It says, "A voice cries in the wilderness, prepare the way, prepare the road, prepare the path of the Lord. He's coming back. He's coming to save us. Make straight in the desert a highway for God." And this is the very image that we've talked about in the Gospel of Mark. He picks up, he says, God's coming. That was prophesied, that was talked about in the future, but now it's here. And it talked about John the Baptist coming and making a way. And is that that Jesus actually picks it up in his teaching? It's the way of Jesus. In the Gospel of Matthew, there's this extended sermon series we often call the Sermon on the Mount. And near the end of that, he says, there's a wide gate and there's a narrow gate. But you need to walk on that narrow road. Walk through the narrow gate and walk along the way. And the climax of this is in John chapter 14, verse 6. He's talking with his disciples again. And he says, I'm going to go prepare a place for you. And Thomas, he's like, he's been with Jesus. He's seen all the miracles. He says, Just show us the way. Just Jesus, point me where to go. And Jesus says, no. I am the way. And that is not just like a poetic, like, oh, that's nice. He said, I'm the... No, do you get it? He said, no, I am the path. Everything that we've been talking about, that you know, that's me. And here's the thing. They didn't have step counters back then. I don't know how many of you guys count your steps. You're like, 10,000. Right? They literally walked everywhere. There was no Uber. There was no public transport. It was to say it was just a metaphor doesn't give it justice. They walked everywhere. They where they went, they had to walk. It was this visceral thing. When Jesus said, no, I am the way. I am the way. And then, interestingly enough, as we go on, the next slide is, said the disciples actually became followers of the way. This is actually the first name for all the disciples. It wasn't like there goes the church or the Christians. They were followers of the way. Acts chapter 9, verse 2, it says, as Saul, so this is the Apostle Paul before he converted, he was killing Christians. He says, Saul asked him, the chief priest, for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, the Hodos, men or women, he might bring them and bring them bound to Jerusalem. And all throughout Acts, you can read the way. And the translators, they capitalize the way, because this is what they were called. This is our first name, as it were. So a few implications. First of all, interesting, or maybe not a coincidence, that our office shared coffee space is called the Waypoint. The Waypoint. I think it was a vote. If you were around here 2 years ago, we voted. I don't know if Vig rigged it or not, but we voted and it came through, right? I don't know. Because there was the creek, there was the bell, there was something else, but
the waypoint, a stopping place on a journey. And man, if you are able to visit during the week, like that, that's our prayer as students come through, as people who work in different coffee shops or things like, or people who work along the street. Sometimes they come in into the office and a lot of people, besides kind of doing the thing where it's like it's hipster, right? So it's like, oh, this is really cool. Others have said, you know, there's some kind of peace in here that I don't know what it is, but I want to be a part of it. The waypoint. Point number two, Christianity, as we call it, or living the way, is not simply something in your head. It's not simply a set of rules to remember or a set of beliefs to know. It's about actually living it out. Like how you go about on your drive home or how you do your taxes or how you interact in your office really, really matters. It's about walking this life out following Jesus. It is not just being book smart or just knowing it all. It's way, way more than that. And thirdly, the way forward is completely different, perhaps, than what we think it is. And we're going to jump right into the end of Mark. We're going to be reading three different sections towards the end of Mark. So 32 all the way to 52. And maybe you're wondering, are we still in chapter 10? We're still in chapter 10. Are we still in Mark? Yeah, we're still in Mark. But this is the end of that way section, is what commentators call it. This whole section from the end of chapter 8 all the way to the end of chapter 10. We're on a road trip with Jesus. And he's gathering his disciples close. And he says, you need to pay attention to what I'm saying to you. And we're going to see very quickly why. So we're going to read chapter 10, 32 to 34. And they were on the road. You know what that means. Going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, "We are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise." He is, again, gathering disciples and teaching them about the way. This is the third time, a sequence of three times, where Jesus is saying to them, guys, the Son of Man, which is a reference to the book of Daniel. We talked about this a few weeks ago. There was this kind of image of this prophecy of this Son of Man, which on one hand just means human, but this Son of Man who becomes exalted and reigns and rules with God. And Jesus is taking that picture for himself. He's saying the Son of Man is going to be delivered. He's going to be crucified. He's going to be mocked. He's going to be killed. And it is precisely the thing that they were not expecting. Precisely the thing that they were not expecting. It wasn't the way forward in their eyes. Maybe they were looking at, you know, Jerusalem was the big city. It was the holy city. And here they are with the hottest thing in town, Jesus. Maybe they were ready to, like, take it over. Maybe you know, they were ready to go actually sky high and go to the top. Maybe we need to, you know, we do so much good around here. Well, let's do good in Jerusalem. But it wasn't the way forward. And very, very quickly, we're going to move to verse 35 to 45. Very quickly, we see they don't get it. They don't get it. So verse 35, it says, "And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask you.' And he said to them, 'What do you want me to do for you?' And they said to him, 'Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory. And Jesus said to them, you don't know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with a baptism with which I am baptized? And they said to him, we are able. And Jesus said to him, the cup that I drink, you will drink. And the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to grant, but is for those for whom it has been prepared. And then the 10 heard it, and they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to him and said to them, you know that those who are considered rulers to the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Just a few chapters ago, James and John, their brothers, along with Peter, they're kind of the inner circle with Jesus. So there's the 12, but then there's these three who seem to be even closer. They have this moment on the mountain where Jesus' glory, and it talks about this brightness shining through. And it's perhaps this is what they were thinking about. They said, wow, we've seen Jesus in his glory. Somehow they've missed Jesus talking about, I'm going to die, and like this, they could just over their head. And they come to Jesus with this, like, toddler-sounding request. Can you do me anything? Like, can you just grant my wish, please? And Jesus is patient enough to say, what do you want me to do for you? He talks about drinking the cup and being baptized. Drinking the cup was this image, this picture of judgment. All throughout the Old Testament, God says, you're going to drink this cup of judgment. And Jesus says, I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be killed. I am going to suffer the judgment of God on me. And he talks about baptism, which is not just a dunking. It referred to this picture of the chaotic waters of judgment. And we think of Noah and his ark, the waters, the flood waters. You have to know that people who saw the power of the sea, and maybe you've seen that before, even maybe Lake Ontario, there's something so powerful about it, and it became this picture of God's judgment. And Jesus says, can you do that? Well, do you really want this? And at the point where they say, we are able, Jesus kind of says, you know what? Yeah. You don't know what you're asking for, but you will suffer. We know many of the disciples close to him would die a martyr's death on his behalf. But they don't know what they're asking. And the funny thing is, it says, when the 10 heard it, they became indignant at James and John. So there's 12, right? So there's two, they kind of like get Jesus aside and they do this little thing. It's like, hey, can you do this for us? Can we sit at your right and your left in your glory? And Jesus is saying, actually, the picture is here. My glory is not what you think. My glory is actually on a cross. And those on my right and my left were the thieves and the criminals who would be beside him. That's the right and the left beside him. And here's the interesting thing. The 10 who come, they're mad. They're indignant. They're not mad that James and John had the audacity to, like, say this. They're like, oh, man, we should have got there first. Like, we should have, like, we needed to ask first. We wanted. And this at this point that Jesus talks about the Gentiles who lorded over them. And they would know this. The Roman rule was used power and brutality. And this was all around. They would know exactly what it is. And you know, on any given week of a news cycle, like there's probably some kind of story I could tell you. But like February and March has been juicy, right? Like even north of the border, we have this alleged case of our prime minister's office leaning on the former attorney general, and then the stories of this massive, powerful company, you know, soliciting, perhaps, you know, influencing, using their power, leaning on the prime minister's office to kind of get their way, to kind of get this deferred process so they can continue to, you know, get government contracts, allegedly, right? And then just last week, I don't know if you heard this very puzzling story of celebrities and the rich and the famous using their means to try to get their students, excuse me, their kids into these you know, prestigious schools, paying hundreds and thousands of dollars, photoshopping their faces on the faces of athletes so that they can get in as athletes. You know, it's like it's so sick, it's so twisted, and they're using their power in this. They are lording it over them. But it's not just a problem out there, is it? I have discerned that after the first word, which is often mommy, it's the second one is mine, and no. Right, we are. It's like we are all born with, like, not literally, but we're born like with our elbows out, right? Because beyond, from that moment on, we are fighting our way. It's my way. It's not your way. I'm first. I get to go first. And if we just went through March break, where every day is a talk about, you know, it's life is not fair, and you know it's not your turn first. But isn't it true about all of us? I mean, just think, we were talking about the road and the way, right? Like, I'm not going to ask a show of hands of how many of you guys suffer with road rage. But here's, I mean, isn't that a picture of me first? Like, have you ever been, it's like, you're driving on the way, and maybe there's a little traffic, and, you know, there is a lane there, but you're like, I'm going to abide by the rules. I'm not, because if I cut out and I cut back in, it really caused, maybe you have a good heart like that. But then, you know, a few cars zoom through and they're like, oh, this open, I'm going to use it. And then they come and cut you off. And maybe you don't shake your fist at them, but have you ever done the, you pass them and you just look. It's like, I judge you. Like, in that moment, I judge you. And we're constantly offended. We're constantly wanting our way. And Jesus is saying, no, not so with you. See, we should be the kind of people who in our workplace, in our world, are able to say, you know what? You go ahead. You know, you take this sale. You go ahead. This promotion, you know, I can have it. I cannot have it. It doesn't really matter to me. On the road, we should actually let people through. If someone's in a jam, and we should heed and give way. That's the kind of people we should be. But we're on. And do you know why? At the moment that you do that, do you know what our answer should be? Not like, oh yeah, I'm a good person. Like, deep down, I am pretty good. It should be, you know what? The person who made everything, I'm with him. He's my dad. So I don't need this promotion. You know, that next level of recognition that we are all longing for, I don't need that. I am loved by my Father, and it is so soul satisfying that I can let it go. I can be cut off and run off the road and not take offense. Because maybe you needed to be on your way. I can't read your mind. Maybe there is an emergency for you. We should be the kind of people who should lay it down and let it go. And maybe you're thinking, this is not good news. This is not good news. You're not that person. Last week, while we were still in chapter 10, Vic shared about this, the rich young hipster. And he he was this rich young person, which I imagine to be like, in my head, he's like the rich young tech startup guy, like 30 years old, millionaire. He just had it going on. And interestingly, it says he came and he ran as Jesus on the way, on the road. He came, he fell before him, but the conclusion of that was he walked away sad. And the disciples were like, how can anyone be saved? And maybe at this point, we should similarly be asking, as we look at the 12 disciples, they were with Jesus for 2-3 years, walking on the road. They were eating with him. Like, they did everything with him. They didn't get it. And I'm looking around the room, and I'm not seeing a lot of people who get it. And we should be asking, who then can be saved? What in the world am I going to do if I'm not doing this? This last section is for us. It's verse 46 to 52. It's Jesus heals this blind Bartimaeus. And they came to Jericho. And as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road, the way. And then he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth. He began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and called him and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. There is a hope for you and I. This story, this healing is not there by mistake. It's there. It's to tell and complete this kind of road trip story as they continue along this journey to Jerusalem. Notice first his name. It's kind of repeated a few times, Bartimaeus, which Bar is son of. So, and then it kind of spells it out. Bartimaeus, a beggar, son of Timaeus, if you didn't get that. Like, his name is son of Timaeus, son of Timaeus. But Timaeus, it meant unclean. You know, there's so many names in the Bible where, you know, the meaning is embedded, and it's typically positive. I don't know how you've gone about naming your children, right? You think, let's go with something cool, right, and positive. This is son of unclean, dirty. Perhaps because he was blind, he was an outcast of society. And it has to be almost like repeated twice. Hey, he's son of outcast. Son of outcast? Outcast. Son of outcast. And it was repeated. He was blind, and he was a beggar beside the road. Notice his calling out. He says, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." It's really interesting. A few chapters ago, when Peter, you know, this disciple, there's this kind of aha moment when he says, "You are the Messiah," as in, "You are the promised anointed king in the line of David." And after 3 years of journeying with Jesus, it's like Peter finally gets it. Interesting. This blind man on the side of the road calls out, "Son of David." It's like he didn't have the relational capital, but somehow, through God's gift and providence, he got it. He called out, "Son of David." Some of us have lived a long journey, and we, you know, maybe some of us grew up in church, and from 4 or 5, we've memorized, you know, Bible passages. We know a lot. and we're all following Jesus, but other of us, maybe you haven't, you don't know, half the stuff has gone a little, but there's an opportunity for you to call out Son of David. You don't need like 3 years of Bible memory and 2 years of this, you might know zero about what the Bible is about, but you can call out Son of David, like this blind beggar, Son of David. And he says, have mercy on me. Like, save me. I need your help. Have pity on me. Have mercy on me. I am unclean. I am dirty. I am unworthy. I'm an outcast. Have mercy on me. That's what he calls out. Notice his response as Jesus calls him. One commentator notes, it seems like Jesus stops, and because he's blind, he doesn't move. He calls him, and he lets him come to him because that's where he last heard the sound. But notice it says, throwing off his cloak. This was, again, a detail that Mark wants us to hear. His cloak was probably the only thing he had wrapped around him, perhaps to keep him warm during the night. Perhaps he laid it in front of him during the day where he collected, you know, people's giving. This was everything he had. Everything. This past week, if you were in our small groups, there was a question about what is your most prized possession? Did anybody... guys touch that question as we were looking again at that rich young man? You know, what is your most prized, little confession time, one of my most prized possession is this jacket. I'm not kidding. I'm embarrassed to say I don't like hanging out there, because if you knew what I knew, I might lose it. It is so, it's like it's three layers of Gore-Tex, which it means it's awesome. It's made for ice climbing in Alaska, which I will never do. But that means on a spring day, I know I will be dry, okay? It's like the sleeves are extra long so you can like put your ice pick in, and then the pocket is made so that, you know, because you're hanging on the mountain, you're like, oh, I need something. So it's like, it's just so beautiful. And I am embarrassed to say, when I think of this thing, I have warm feelings, like fuzzy, warm feelings. It's like if I lost it, I would be so, so sad. And it is so sad that I'm telling you. This is so terrible. But isn't there something in your life where you're holding on to? Man, this morning as we're worshiping, as we're praying, is there something that actually you're holding on to? And you're saying, Jesus, no, but I need this. This comforts me. It has so much value to me. I cannot let it go. And what a contrast. This rich young ruler just a chapter ago, he walks away. Jesus says, sell everything and follow me. This blind man, without even the instruction, he throws it away. And he runs after Jesus. He says, you are everything. If you're calling me, I don't need anything else. It's gone. And he runs after Jesus. What are you holding on to? What are you holding on to so dear? And you know, maybe it's a process. You know, maybe it's going to be a slow process of you releasing it and letting go. But is everything going to be counted on Jesus? Because this is really the one response that you need. It's faith. He had faith. Jesus recognized that he had faith. He threw away everything he had, and he laid it all down for Jesus. That's what you can do today. You might not know, you don't know exactly where this is going, but if Jesus is who we've been singing about, and maybe you need to know more about who he is and why he's the creator of the world, why it says everything was made through him and for him, this God-man Jesus, and you need to sort that out. But look what he does immediately. This blind beggar who suddenly has sight. It's not just LASIK, okay? This is like blind to instantaneous sight. He follows him on the way. He starts walking with Jesus. He sticks close by. And perhaps this story is here, and perhaps we have his name because actually he became known to the disciples. This is, I think, often the case where these names come up, and it's because they were known in the community. They got up, they followed Jesus, and they walked the walk, and they talked the talk. They followed Jesus on the way. If you are stuck, maybe for over years, you've been doing some Bible reading, you've been spiritual, you try to do good, you try to treat others, you know, like the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated, but you need to actually get on the road with Jesus. You need to follow him. You need disciplines like prayer, like fasting, like daily Bible reading. I've been listening to this app called The Bible in 1 Year, which I've mentioned before. It's a great app. It's about half an hour, but he reads through, Old Testament and New Testament, some of the wisdom literature, Psalms and Proverbs, and there's some reflection on it. And then it occurred to me, I think what I was doing was going to a restaurant and looking at two people having a date, and then walking away. It was like, oh, I was on a date. No. Like, just listening to it was like just seeing it happen. But I wasn't actually then going to Jesus and encountering him and praying. Like, I mean, apps are great. There's so many tools. But if you're not actually going to Jesus, saying, Jesus, thank you for this, you know, just to pray to him, to lay your heart out. Not just like listen to a sermon. I mean, sermons are great. Listen to sermons. Use great apps on your phone. Do all that. But if you are not having a moment where you encounter Jesus, where you're not just watching someone on a date, you're actually sitting down at the table face to face with Jesus. Because that's what we can do. And saying, Jesus, I want to follow you. How are you leading me today? What am I supposed to do about this problem? Or what am I supposed to do about my kids? And you can lay it all out for him and follow him along this way. We sang, everything I count as dear, everything I once held dear, I count it all as loss. Lead me to the cross where your love poured out. At the end of the day, Jesus himself, he was stripped naked. His cloak was taken away from him. He was mocked. He was spat upon. He was beaten. He was crucified on a cross. He's asking you to lay your life down, but man, he laid his life down first. He went first, so you can do it too. Let's pray. Jesus, you have been doing a work in this place. You've been speaking, and Lord, I pray that you would continue to do that. For those of us who just sit down, and maybe this is a bit new, and this is a bit strange, and we're not sure what the whole other singing and praying thing was about, but something in us has sparked. We've heard your name before. We know somehow that 2,000 years later, people still speak of you as if you are alive. And you had all these encounters with people recorded in the Bible where you heal them, where you change them. And we need some kind of change. Something in us tells us we need you. Lord, would you give us faith? For those of us who are holding on and holding on, maybe it's something painful. Maybe it's simply a good thing, like a job or a person that we are holding on to, or a dream of something that we need to let go and say, no, we're going to follow you. We're going to run after you. We're going to put everything on you because you are worth it. Lord, would you start us on a new path, on a new journey, where we can ask questions, where we can wonder, and where we can all together as this church, as his family, follow you along this way. We thank you Please continue to do your work in us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.